All right. Let's get fired up here.
Maximum freedom. Read.
Stay on target.
Maximum freedom.
Stay on target.
Maximum freedom. Read Rothbard.
Well, hello and welcome to the Actual Anarchy Podcast. This is the podcast where we talk about movies from a Rothbardian anarcho-capitalist perspective. And tonight is episode 255 of the show, the 255th running of these Olympic Games. And we're going to be talking about the not South Korean version of Swing Kids, but no, the 1993 starring Christian Bale. And we have an excellent guest coming up right after we do our opening remarks with my co-host and Swing Heil partner, Robert Paul Johnson. How are you doing over there?
What is up, good peoples? Good to talk to you again this evening times. Yes, I am back. You can't stop me. Try and stop me, you can't.
Well, that just left me flabbergasted, and I'm just, I've been stopped, just stunned. Now, we're going to be talking about this movie, but I think that you also watched the Korean version, so maybe we can make some mention of that. And I'm going to weave it all together when we start talking about the next episode. I'm going to do like a 7 degrees of Kevin Bacon separation that gets us from our last movie to this movie and our next movie. It's going to be wild, man.
Wow. I'm really looking forward to that. That's some hot sizzle to drop right in the intro to keep people tuned in and listening.
That's right. Yeah. Or get some of our bonus content. Go to actuallyanarchy.com/Patreon and you'll get even more of the sizzle. We did about 35, 40 minutes of pre-show bonus content with our guest. And It's only the best for our Patreon supporters. I gotta say.
Right. If you aren't doing it right now, you're dumb and you're doing your life wrong.
Right. Yeah. And I will add that our guest has been a longtime listener. Even before we were called Actual Anarchy, he's been a listener. And he knows that we've improved our production values significantly, so much so that we can actually degrade the quality of our content. And it still evens out in the end.
That's right. We put in less effort, but we got the production quality up, so it evens out. It's perfect.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. It's the secret sauce. That's what you got to do. Just you get the production quality up, and then you can ease into.
Then you just coast, baby. East Street.
That's right.
That's right.
Well, anyway, Robert, as you know, it don't mean no thing if it ain't got that swing. And we will get into the swing of things and the Last Nighters portion of the show once I hit the right button.
Sick.
Let's get it up. Hey everyone, it's Daniel Elwood and Robert Paul Johnson. We are Last Nighters. You can find us at lastnighters.com and also on the Liberty Movement's YouTube channel. Tonight is episode 198 of the show. We're talking about the 1993 Disney flick Swing Kids, starring Christian Bale, among others. And this should be a very fun episode. It's going to have a lot of things to talk about. And as it is now October, it is in a way a bit of a horror film, though in a not the traditional slasher monster sense, but more in the insidious nature of propaganda and what citizens will do to each other. And we'll see eerily similar things happening in present day across the world. And I think that is one of the reasons why this movie, if you watch it now, will resonate even more so than when it came out in 1993. So you can find the show notes and more for this at lastnighters.com/198. And joining us via satellite from parts unknown, it is Reverend Lee. He has been a listener of our show since long ago, probably 4 years ago, even before this iteration of Last Nighters. We did a show originally called Read Rothbard. That was back in like 2016, 2017, something like that. So he's been listening ever since that time. And he also, oddly enough, has performed dance. And that is relevant to this particular movie, Swing Kids. And we will bring him on now. Reverend Lee, welcome back. Thanks for joining us. And why don't you just let everyone know a little bit about yourself and we'll get started on this movie.
I am the Reverend Lee. I come to you live from an undisclosed location in Arizona. I have, like Daniel was saying, I've been watching their shows for quite some time. Got a background in philosophy and psychology. I did some ballroom dance in college. I've done subsequently done some ballroom dance for charity. And I have seen this particular film at least 4 or 5 times. And it's, I'm going to just say right now, it is still as good today as it was when I first saw it. And back to you.
Hello?
Daniel?
Skiddly bop! All right, yes, I'm back. A little bit
super
of a
delay. What was that?
So the delay.
Did you have
was
to go
this.
Take care of some business?
I wish. That would be like actually something fun and interesting to talk about. But no, what this was me loading the Google description on which we discuss or begin the discussions. And I was in the midst of doing that. I was mid backstroke doing that. And I can't speak while I'm muted doing that. So that's hence the delay. But here we are with the Google description, the long anticipated and awaited Google description for Swing Kids, 1993 PG-13 drama/musical or drama/music, 1 hour, 52 minutes, 6.8 out of 10 on IMDb, 56% on Rotten Tomatoes, 39% Metacritic, and 88 dog whistlers like this movie on the old Google. And the description is thus, and very short, brief: American big band jazz beats in the hearts of young German friends, Robert Sean Leonard and Christian Bale and Frank Whaley, confronted by the Nazis. Came out March 5th, 1993, directed by Thomas Carter, music by James Horner. The setting is Hamburg, box office $5.6 million on a budget of $12 million. So a bit of a box office dog. And speaking of dogs, let's get your opening salvo, Robert.
I'm waiting for my squeedly beep beep bop boop scoop and Scooby Doo. Where's the my title thank you card? Squeedly beep bop scoop up boop beep doo. Guess what, Swing Kids? We talk about you.
That's right. And in the pre-show, we were talking about our production quality getting better and better, but that only is actually better when we use it properly. But anyway,
yeah, the timing is really bad on that one. I blame the producer. Yes, okay. He's okay when he's paying attention. He does his job, but he gets distracted easily. Shiny objects, you know how it is. So Swing Kids, 1993. I didn't know it existed. When Daniel first propositioned me this week, he gave me the option of either Train to Busan or Swing Kids. And I thought, okay, cool. So I Googled Swing Kids. Actually, I think I searched just off YouTube. And the first thing that came up was a South Korean version of Swing Kids. So I said, sweet, okay, two different South Korean movies. Let me take a look at this trailer. And it was communism versus capitalism, South Korea during the Korean War. And I thought, more to talk about than a zombie movie. So let's do that. And I ended up watching about half of it before, I forget what, but I ended up Googling it. And then the first thing that comes up is this 1993 movie. And I said, oh, crap, what movie are we doing? Turns out we're doing the 1993. So, but I don't think my time was wasted watching the 2018. They're quite different tonally. And of course, they cover different subject matter being placed in different places. But, you know, they both feature a lot of dancing and people fighting with authority figures and that kind of thing. We're definitely going to have a little bit more to talk about with the 1993 based on the current events, like you mentioned in the pre-show with the kids joining the Hitler Youth. And, it doesn't get into the brown shirts, but there's plenty of like indoctrination propaganda kind of thing going on with, all that in the. It's not necessarily like the Karen squad, but the Hitler Youth do kind of run wild a little bit, and they are given essentially, you know, they could beat up people in the streets and then nothing's going to happen to them, right? Like in a free society, I suppose, you know, you have a bunch of thugs going around beating people up in the streets and there would be consequences, but these people they're essentially given carte blanche to do as they see fit. Or if there were consequences, we didn't get to see them in this film. The villains are basically beating up people as they see fit, and the heroes just kind of have to take it. They're very different tonally, even though they both cover serious subject matters. I would say the South Korean one is it's much lighter. I mean, there are dance battles in that version. There's no dance battles in the 93 movie. I would recommend, though, not watching it the way I watched it, because I watched the Korean movie first, and that movie was very bright and colorful with really good camera work and lighting. And then I watched the 93 version, and it was suitably it was accurate for the era they were portraying. Like, we always see Nazi Germany in this gray, dark kind of light, flat kind of color. And that's what we much got in this movie. I don't think it's to its detriment. I think it's pretty apropos. This movie has, I think, a bit of a stronger, more of a heart to it, like with the characters and the character working and the conflict between the main three friends. You get some of that in the South Korean one, but it gets a little bit. It gets a little bit wacky in that movie. I would say it's hard. It almost treads a fine line. You may think it does it all very, very well. And other times you may think it's not really working because it's a whole bunch of different tones. Like, 1 minute they're having a dance battle, the next minute someone's murdered and you're not really sure how to feel necessarily. But overall, I think both movies have a lot to talk about. We're mostly going to focus on the 93 because Daniel didn't see the 2018. And we usually don't do two different movies in a week. This was just an accident. So we'll mostly focus on the 93, but we will probably talk it up. We'll see. We'll see what our guest wants to bring up. I know Daniel's got some notes. I'm sure our guest has a whole pile of notes. So I'm eager to get into this one. Should be a good time.
All right. Well, very good, Robert. And thank you for actually bringing up the South Korean version. You're correct. I did not see it, but I think that there are still going to be some interesting things worthy of talking about. And I know that Reverend Lee, our guest, saw it as well. So Reverend Lee, why don't you just take up from where Robert left off there and sort of maybe touch on a little bit of both. Because I know that you suggested Swing Kids, obviously intending the 93 version, and then discovered the 2018 South Korean version. And so you, as a safety backup, watched it as well. And seemed to think in the pre-show that you didn't see a whole lot in it, but with Robert's opening discussion, before we get into the Christian Bale version, what do you think of the South Korean version?
The South Korean version, which the title of it is likely based on them not even realizing there was the 93 version. The Swing Kids was an actual movement, in a youth movement in Germany during the rule of the how does that YouTuber put it? Early 20th century German nationalists. So that it was a legitimate movement. It was based off of an appreciation of like American jazz music, British fashion, etc., which has gone over the intro of the 93 film. But the South Korean version of the film of the same name it's interesting. Its production value is very high. Its cinematography is pretty up there. Its plot is, as Robert's mentioning, is all over the place. Like, you'll go 1 minute it's a dance fight, the next minute there's some serious things going on, the next minute it's some flippant stuff. It ends up being really, really dark by the end of it, but as many South Korean films are, which is why I adore them. But it's got some pretty good things to talk about, specifically regarding being against ideology in general, and misuse of authority, etc. But there's just, I don't think there's enough in it to sustain an entire episode. Whereas with the 93 version, which is what I originally intended, there is enough there to sustain episode and a half worth of conversation. It has depth and As I've mentioned in the pre-show content, I've seen it multiple times, and I think it still holds up. We'll see what y'all think, with y'all not having seen it. But the 2018 Board is totally worth the money I paid for on Amazon to buy it, using some of my pre-existing credits. So, that's a really good dancing. They're the very, very skilled tap dance in that particular film.
Yeah, I wasn't quite clear why they called it Swing Kids when it was tap dancing.
There was some jazz involved, I guess. And I guess one of the people was familiar with the movement. No idea why they called it Swing Kids, although that was the name of the group at the end during the Christmas show.
Right, yeah.
And that was primarily jazz.
Yeah, fair enough, I suppose. But it wasn't swing dancing, which is why the 93 version was like, oh, well, this makes sense. You would call yourself Swing Kids because you're swing dancing. But right. I don't know. They're doing like jazz. They were just like jazz tap dancing. And like, okay.
Yeah. Now,
Robert, you were not aware of the 93 version. And Reverend Lee, you were not aware of the 2018 version.
Well, up until when I sent you that email, that was right as I went to watch it yesterday in preparation for this. I actually sat down to watch Swing Kids again. And I'm like, wait a minute, there's another movie called, oh crap. And so I went ahead and bought it for Sadie and then messaged you like, and then once I was done watching it with taking notes while I did so, I went and watched the other one, took notes on it. Mind you, it was totally worth the $2 and something cents I paid to own it.
You're well prepared, and pro tip for anyone who has an Amazon account, if you buy something and then tell them that they can deliver it in a slower amount of time, they'll often give you a digital credit that you can then apply to purchases for movies and other things. So I do that all the time.
Oh, God, yes. Mm. All the time. Mm. That's what Amazon Day delivery is for.
Yeah, and I also use smile.amazon.com and have selected the Ludwig von Mises Institute as my charity of choice. So they get a very tiny percent. Based on my purchases.
My selection on Smile is the Arizona Citizens Defense League, which I am a life member of. So, hooray guns! You know?
Nice. So.
All right. Both of those things are worthy causes. So, related to the 93 version, I'm surprised that, Robert, you were not familiar with it or had not heard of it, because I thought that this was a bigger movie when it came out. I remember when it came out, and I recall back when we were in college that swing dancing and swing lessons and swing, you know, doing swing dancing was a thing again. And I think it's because of this movie. And I also think that this is the connection to Swingers that came out in 1996.
Also the Cherry Pop and Daddies.
Yes. Yep. Cherry Pop and Daddies, who are in Swingers, right? And so you got the Vince Vaughn, John Favreau movie. And this is how I'm going to connect it to the next movie we're going to be doing, which is Psycho, which we're not doing the Gus Van Sant version unless you want to watch that. But we're going to do the Hitchcock version because it's Halloween times, you know, October and all that.
So how is Psycho connected to Swingers?
Because Vince Vaughn stars as Norman Bates in the Gus Van Sant version.
Okay.
And he's in Swingers, which Swing Kids probably inspired the making of the movie Swingers and swing dancing just in general back when we were in college. Okay. See, I'm Kevin Baconing the shit out of this thing.
Excellent. Footloose is actually a very big part, right? I mean, this is when we're pissed off and we're just angry, we just need to dance. This is what happens in this movie.
And the authorities don't want you doing it.
And the authorities don't want you doing it. They just come and shut down the clubs, man.
Yeah,
they I'm gonna go there. Just bring in Guardians of the Galaxy, you know.
Oh yeah, I didn't like that
one scene with with Gamora and Star-Lord talking when he's
at
talking
the
about
end?
Footloose. No, no.
Oh,
in the middle.
Oh, they're talking about Footloose.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And it's not entirely true that I didn't know about this movie. It's true that I had completely forgotten about it.
Okay.
So I just searched it. Found the South Korean, and I was like, oh, well, this is the movie they're talking about. Then when I saw the 1993 version, I go, that looks familiar. I didn't remember seeing it. When I watched it, it was all new to me, but I do remember seeing like the poster or something.
Right. And not to be confused with Newsies, which also has a very young Christian Bale.
Now, this is after Newsies, right? Newsies was like 89 or 91.
He looked way younger.
The year after Newsies.
Okay, he looked way younger in Newsies, I think.
Yeah.
When films are released and when they're actually filmed are two entirely different things.
This is true. Especially when you're developing, you know, you can change quite a bit in that short amount of time. Also, oddly enough, Christian Bale was just voted as the best Batman by some poll.
Okay.
Yep. Good. We'll see how Pattinson comes out, but we'll see. So far, I don't really disagree.
Yeah, I got a soft spot for Michael Keaton.
But... Oh, so do I, but I think his best Batman performance was, in fact, in Birdman.
Yeah.
Which was an amazing film.
I enjoyed Birdman quite a bit.
Yeah, that was so good. Or when he played the Vulture.
Oh, yeah, and Spider-Man. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was a very Batman-y role.
It really was.
So Swing Kids, the movie that Kevin Bacon.
What does that have to do with Spider-Man, Daniel? I don't know what you're talking about.
Spider-Man. I'm not sure how we got to Spider-Man, but I know that a lot of people get upset when they talk about the current, shall we say, regime that is based on a monomaniacal dedication to one metric. And likening that to anything that's happened in history where groups were divided and then one group was persecuted, and that if you even bring it up, then you're the bad guy.
If the jackboot fits, you must convict, you know.
I had a little saying in my head earlier today. Somebody had posted a similar meme and somebody pushed back on them in their comments and was like, how dare you liken this to anything that, you know, happened in this historical period of time? And I was like, well, if it quacks like a duck and steps like a goose, what are you going to call it?
Yeah, I know there's a tendency to liken things to this period in history, but I don't know, man. I tend to give people the benefit of the doubt because the differences aren't that huge. It's just that we're not that far along yet.
Well, I mean, people have a whole lot of things. Paying attention to Australia at all. Again, gangs of people wearing costumes just beat people in the streets for daring to defy the, given their circumstances, completely hysterical rules.
Right. Yeah. And there's also the completion fallacy where we see the end result of one thing and temporarily we are still in the beginning stages of another event. And so the other comment was, they use the number of 11 million. I think traditionally 6 million, but I think they're including war casualties. So they get it up to 11. However, I also saw recently that there was an article saying that the UN estimates that up to 150 million people might starve to death as a result of limitations in productive and economic output. So that would pale the former thing in comparison just in casualties.
Yeah, I don't think a great deal of the left is going to admit that this is very similar to that until there are actual like gulag death camp type things.
Well, no.
If people just die from economic reasons, like I don't think that they're going to see the injustice in that. I think they're going to say
that's capitalism failing, bro.
It's capitalism failing, but it's also necessary. And more people would have died in the pandemic if we hadn't done it. So how dare you?
They won't ever see that they're wrong until they change their mind and, you know, do the whole circular firing squad thing. And obviously they were against these restrictions the whole time. It was only those bad people who were no longer appropriately progressive who were actually in charge. The ones that have a scapegoat, they will and it becomes unpopular enough, particularly among your coastal elites, will they change their mind when it becomes politically convenient, because the progressives and the leftists care about one thing and one thing only, and that is power. Which is why I have a particular dislike of them.
And it's why their opinions change with the wind. Whatever way the wind's blowing they're not ideologically consistent people.
No, just consistently seeking power for power's sake. And that's what a lot of the virtue signaling will get them. And my wife recently read Animal Farm to the kids, and I overheard some of it, and I'm like, holy shit. You know, two legs bad, four legs good. It's always been two legs are better than four legs. You know, so like the narrative changes incrementally enough to where what was at first demonized then is co-opted and becomes a good thing, which is, you know, one of the great insights of Orwell. The other great insight, of course, is the memory hole, or the retroactive erasing or changing of history. He who controls the past controls the present. He who controls the present controls the future. And we see that across the board in mainstream media, social media, and everything else. And there's a strong parallels to all the propaganda that we see demonstrated in Swing Kids. And dare I say this, but some of the propaganda was somewhat convincingly appealing to those who may have been in Germany at the time as a consequence of the repercussions of the Treaty of Versailles, the reparations needed to be paid due to the United States getting involved and then defeating Germany, making it so that these very high sanctions could be applied against Germany. Thus, we see the family saying that butter, don't use so much. It's got to last a whole month. These are people who are suffering in that period of time. And then there's this charismatic leader who promises to improve things and that they're a better people and a strong people and that everyone's against them and that unites them and then gets them to follow along with the authority that is being presented there. And we see that, you know, like in the Milgram experiments, where if somebody's in a position of authority, people will tend to listen to them. And we see also demonstrated within the film that as you get bonded, like in initiation style, like at a fraternity or whatever, that you grow a bond and an affinity for your compatriots or the people that you are in that group with. We even see that with the boxing match between Noah Wiley, the ER guy,
Emil.
And Christian Bale. Yeah, Emil.
Emil and Thomas, yes. What's even more interesting is the main character, Peter. His mother ends up, even though his father was in fact imprisoned, etc., by the Nazis, his mother starts accepting some of the things when she's starting to accept the protection of Sturmbannführer Knopf. Yeah. The, you know, Kenneth Branagh's character. And mind you, Kenneth Branagh, minimal role in this, but like a lot of his earlier stuff, hits it out in the park. Solid actor.
I think he's the same Nazi guy in like three or four movies.
Oh, yeah. But
it's strong. It's strong.
I don't know why, but hey, you know, jack boots fitting, who knows? But if you look at like a lot of what you're saying with the way people started internalizing propaganda, you start accepting it because it does provide these governments, organizations that do provide at least the illusion of security and the illusion of order.
Yep.
When what they're really producing is chaos for their own power. This is ties directly into, you know, a certain recent phenomena. But I'm not saying the current people are Nazis, because Nazism has been dead for so long it's ridiculous. And by modern time frame may as well have been, you know, when Christ was walking around. It's simply ridiculous. They do not exist currently. Yeah, sure, there's some people that walk around LARPing. But the real problem is the idea of unaccountable authority, the idea of using it to get power without having to be held to account by anyone, which is the problem. It's not.
Yeah,
which is the comparison I make with these ancient times. I don't care that the current people aren't walking around in very, very, you know, Hugo Boss-esque, wonderfully styled outfits.
Who cares? Which is why it's such a joke why the EU has like censored all the old Nazi stuff, as if that's what it is that's causing people to become.
Because fashion matters.
Fashion is what's doing it. If you start wearing swastikas, then you're going to start being stormtrooping around. I'm glad Daniel brought up the Treaty of Versailles. I know it gets brought up a lot, a fair amount on the show when we talk about Nazi Germany and that kind of thing. But I think that the Christian Bale character really kind of exemplifies a lot of the feelings of the soldiers that fought in World War One, Hitler being one of them. The German army really felt betrayed by the politicians when World War One ended because they had never been defeated in the field. And then Germany was to blame, put the blame for the entire war and had to pay amazing reparations, like Daniel said, and it really threw the entire German nation into a depression. And there's a reason why Hitler had the French surrender in the exact same train car that the Germans surrendered to the Allies, I believe, in the same train car. So there's like definite like revenge for the injustice of what happened during World War One to them. And the rise of Nazism and the whole authoritarian apparatus in the Christian Bale character, he just cared that like he was getting power. He just cared that he was very utilitarian. He's like, the Nazis have it great. Everybody does what we say. Nobody messes with us. We just go around doing whatever we want. It was really a case of Germany kind of asserting itself. I mean, over people that are just peacefully living, like they invaded Czechoslovakia and they annexed, but basically Austria, and then invaded Poland very, very easily and did all this horrible stuff, of course. But it very much was a case of people who were depressed for quite a period of time coming out of it and saying enough and we're going to dominate, apparently. It's just another excuse as to why the United States shouldn't have gotten involved in World War One. There's all kinds of reasons. Yeah.
World War II was a direct consequence of World War One.
Right.
Because of the insistence on the Treaty of Versailles, the unconditional surrender, the ridiculous reparations, that is what directly led to World War II. World War One, based on, you know, this alliances America wasn't ever supposed to get into, if you pay any attention to our founding generation, the entangling alliances with none bit. Like, why would you do this? Why did we get involved? Well, it's in service of the empire. Initially, the British Empire, which we for quite some time ended up being convinced to basically be the lapdogs of. And to further, they couldn't do it anymore themselves. This is why much, much later, for example, the whole Iran mess occurred. That was British Petroleum couldn't convince the British government to do it for them. So the British government then convinced the U.S. to basically overthrow their leader.
Yeah, Mossadegh.
Mossadegh and install the Shah again. I'm like, why do we care? And how is that in the interest of America in the sense that we would consider America, which would be the people of America? But never forget the elites consider a thing to be the empire, the power, the glory of the empire itself, not the people of the thing. I don't care what the empire wants. What's good for the empire is actively not good for me. It's not good for you. It's not good for you. It's only good for those who are temporarily in power and have no accountability for how they use it and profit ridiculously off of it. Back to the film, just like the block leader. Mm-hmm. When he went in to that, the traitor, Lord only knows if it's a real traitor or not. And this is likely at least a sample, because this is historical fiction. None of these characters are real. But the movement itself was real. These sorts of feelings were real, likely less common than portrayed in the film, because people in general want security. It's one of the base political needs. It's just above peace. So he, you know, gets that radio. Takes the radio and he asks for a few other items from the hall, from the traitor's house, which of course leads to our main character, our hero, Peter and Thomas deciding to get back at him. you know, to cause him a little pain in return, right? So they decide to steal the radio back from the woman that owns the bakery. And, you know, the fake blood on the shirt with the tomato. It's actually a fairly amusing scene with Christian Bale just hamming it up on the, I've been stabbed! Ah! It was seriously, Christian Bale's an amazing actor. And it was just him hamming it up. That had to be fun for him to just play up that level of one of the few moments of amusingly enough humor in the film. And then, of course, Peter ends up getting caught because he refuses to drop the radio like an absolute idiot child. But, you know, not everyone. Yeah, he's a teenager, right?
Teens, yeah, so the lesson here, drop the radio.
Drop the radio and go. if you're going to violate, if you're going to engage in illegal activities in an authoritarian, unaccountable authoritarian regime, and you have an opportunity to escape, take it. Take it fast. Mind you, also, don't piss him off. But we'll just ignore that because it was necessary for the plot. So he ends up having to join the HJ as a condition to not have worse things happen. And his mother ends up convincing him to do it for his family. And like a good, proper son, and this is 100% good on him, he accepts the responsibility to his own family. Family is by far culturally one of the most important things that, you know, we've lost track of apparently now. So after that, Herr Knopp rescues him, right, from the German police and like makes it go away, makes it just disappear. He argues with his mother. He doesn't want to join them. He thinks they're evil. And then his mother tells him one of the better quotes in this, that he must learn to steel himself. He cannot let his feelings overcome him. So he convinces him to join for the good of the family. And like a good son, he does so. And then right after that, because this information is obviously not exactly private, Thomas ends up joining the HJ as well, because Thomas is, at this point, and possibly for the entirety, although that's arguable, his best friend. So, and he does this so that they can stay together. And Thomas himself suggests that they can do a double life. HJ by day, Swink by night. And,
Yeah, and that's one of the things that I thought was pretty interesting in that he has such a strong relationship with Peter that he's willing to join the HJs just to maintain that relationship and stay together. But he's also, Thomas is also like drawn to that power, and he goes through that initiation process and starts to see that he can get away with things that he couldn't otherwise have gotten away with. And he starts to get swayed by these things. And there's all sorts of like psychological things at play here. One is Stockholm syndrome. One is boiling frog.
It's more his relationship, which we revealed a bit later in the film, with his own parents, which is decidedly unhealthy. His parents are an example of the people that just the useful idiots, basically, the people that just go along and in private have their fashionable opinions, but they enable the evil. And he has his father is basically treats him the same way he treats Arvid, treats him as useless. Mm. His father treats him very, very poorly, which ends up turning out not so well for his own father when he, in fact, turns him in for having anti-Nazi sentiment in a later scene in the film. Right, because his father is a bad father, whereas Peter's father was a good father. But thought to be a bad father, perhaps even by his wife, as evidenced by the letter that Frau... One second. Frau Ling? When given his job, he actually delivers books for a bookstore before all the insanity ensues, who, it turns out, is actually the book deliveries are masking forged birth certificates. And the wife of a student of his father is one of the key contact points in this. And this becomes important later. We can get into this now, or we can wait a bit.
No, let's get into it now. We have no time like the present.
I don't know. Yeah, the plot's plot. The audience may have not seen this film, although shame on them. It's an amazing film.
I agree. It's a good film. And the forged birth certificates remind me of some contemporary thing that might be.
What?
Certain
what
types
are you talking
of,
about, Daniel?
Certain types of passport.
Who would consider forging such a thing?
However, I think it has a very limited lifespan because it's going to go digital before you know it.
Oh, please. Like you can't forge digital things. Come on. Really? Really? You think you can't forge digital things?
Well, I'm just trying to buy time before this whole House of Cards crumbles. And, the malfeasance is revealed. However, that might be a bit naive of me to think that it actually ever will be.
All right. So, at a certain point, Herr Knopt suggests to Peter that he should maybe quit his job. Because does he really know he's just delivering books? At this point, he discovers that he's actually delivering forged birth certificates. He ends up freaking out a little bit, having an emotional crisis, ends up shredding one of them, and then goes running off, runs into Thomas. Thomas shows off his motorcycle, et cetera, et cetera. Bit later, because he's superficially complying, he is then assigned to deliver boxes by the HJ. He discovers after a woman and her child end up screaming in terror after he delivers one of them, or sorrow, that they in fact contain the ashes of those removed by the Nazis. He then goes running to Frau Ling's house, and because he can't really talk to his mother, because she's kind of accepted the relationship, budding relationship with her and Herr Knopt. It's revealed that her husband, who was, killed by the Nazis, was in fact a student of his father. His father being a musician, and who refused to comply. Do you mind if I do the full quote of the letter?
Yeah, go for it.
All right. So she reads him a letter from his father to her husband. It's, "We must all take responsibility for what is happening to our country. If those of us who have a voice do not raise it in outrage at the treatment of our fellow human beings, we will have collaborated in their doom. It is not good enough to raise these voices in our homes. Many Germans do this. But outside their doors, all they hear is Hitler's voice of hate, his promises of glory." And then she says, he goes on later in his letter to talk about you. "Every day I look at my son, Peter. He's grown a little bit bigger. He's always already becoming a man. And what curiosity. Always asking questions, question after question, until he fully understands the answer. The sight of his small face, strong and hopeful, awakening to the world around him, is what keeps me going. It is when I think of him that I know what I'm doing must be done." And with that, I need a bio break. I will be right back.
All right, very good. Momentary break for our guest. So, Robert, I think there's a lot kind of going on in this movie, and we're already like butting up against time. So there's so many other things.
Yeah.
I think he was right when he said that there was an episode and a half or so of content in this, and I think that is definitely for sure.
But,
while we're waiting, I was about to make the point that there's a whole lot of psychological phenomena going on here. We have the Stockholm Syndrome, where Peter's mother, her husband, was killed by these people, and yet even she comes to see them as doing good for her and protecting her and
her family.
And her family. Now, she is doing
I think that's probably what she's mainly concerned about.
Right. So it doesn't seem as if she's totally bought into it, but she is complying with these things in order to have that protection.
Because I see her as doing what she needs to do to raise her kids and keep them safe as best as she could.
Right. And sort of compromising her principles.
She's compromising her principles, much like adults in this country do every day, to do what's best for their families. They will sometimes be very pragmatic and give up, you know, their principles in order to keep their family safe. It's not fantastic, but we live in a dirty world. And I think she was doing the best she could. I mean, maybe she could find somebody else, but this is the movie that they told.
Right. And it seems as if they're kind of stuck in their situation, at least how it's sort of presented. And Reverend Lee, we were just talking about the sort of compliance of Peter's mother and almost Stockholm syndrome, but she's doing it in the best interest of protecting her family.
I don't blame her at all for that, in that she was trying to be a good mother. This is not her. I, in fact, don't blame her at all for that. She was trying to do the best in her situation and of limited autonomy in a really, really unpleasant situation.
And she had already seen her very principled husband pay the price.
Yes. And come back a shell, to quote, a shell of a man.
Mm-hmm.
And this
is why. Yeah, so she saw what his principles got him, essentially.
Exactly. I mean, this is why even those that resist tend towards compliance. This is why something like this can happen. This is why the current mess, let's say in Australia, happens. These people comply because they're just used to it, because they see what happens when you try to resist. They're beaten in the street by the cops, right? And, you know, and down there, the police managed to convince the government to pass a law against, the first time in the Anglosphere, amusingly, a law banning any sort of thing of the Nazi variety, but only when it was aimed at them. They didn't care until it was aimed at the police, because apparently they're special snowflakes who lack, let's quote one of my favorite wrestlers, Mankind, the testicular fortitude. By the way, I also like professional wrestling because
there's a lot of good stuff to be found there.
It can be awesome. Occasionally, the plot lines are childish to a level that I'm not sure why anyone cares, but they're occasionally kind of, you know, nifty. Have y'all ever done a thing on The Wrestler with Mickey Rourke?
Did we do that movie? I don't think so.
It was brought up as a potential one because there was a person I knew
film.
Vicariously through another guest who actually was a professional wrestler for a time.
Oh,
and I engaged with him and suggested that we do it, and he was open to the idea, but then tragically he died. So it's like,
sorry. Damn.
There's been like four people that we've either had on the show or we're about to have on the show who, rather than come on the show, would rather have died. I'm glad that Reverend Lee didn't happen to you. We are apparently a curse. It's the Halloween curse of our show.
No, I plan on living perpetually. Cybernetic resurrection all the way.
nice.
Okay. Mind you, I am prepared in the event that I do die, blah, blah, blah. But, you know, take care of my sister, her kids, yeah?
Yeah, yeah.
Want to have my own.
I've told my kids that I want to see their kids grow up before I kick off this mortal coil. But we'll see. Right now, I'm just hoping to make it through the winter without getting into a death camp.
Well, that is the inappropriate term, sir. They are re-education camps for the progressively impaired.
Yes, or quarantining. Yes.
Quarantining ideas. Yeah.
So Reverend Lee, there was another psychological, and I don't know the name of it, because I haven't been in that realm in quite a while, but you talked about Knopp getting Peter to consider turning on his book delivery employer. And he does a bit of a trick to gain his confidence. Initially, he compliments him and offers him a vacation for his family. Mm-hmm. And then he goes, the Columbo thing. Oh, just one more thing. So after he's kind of buttered him up, set him up, built up his ego, praised him, given him a reward, then he gets to the real purpose.
Which is, of course, betray your employer.
Yes.
Or investigate your employer. Because let's be honest, if they're asking for confirmation,
they probably already know.
Yep. They're just trying to, he was just trying to protect Peter because, you know, he wants to, you know, shtup his wife. Well, sorry, mother. Oops.
But it's a great manipulation tactic. And he's Gestapo. The term,
and you've been in college more recently than I have. I pretty much guarantee it.
I look young. I'm not young.
I guarantee I'm older than you. I started college in 1990.
Okay. Yeah, there's a good 5-6 years there.
Yeah, bet. I look younger than I am. So
you're holding up well.
You know, I believe it is the alcohol and tobacco and firearms that
preserving
me. I have thankfully quit smoking the actual Bernie bits, but I do still consume the nicotines because it is in fact an addictive chemical. I do not recommend anyone pick it up. But if you're looking to get off the Bernie bits, honestly, vaping's, yes, it's still bad for you, but it's not as bad as the Bernie bits. Which the only good thing I can say about the HGA in this film, as mentioned in the film, is they do in fact at least pretend to not allow smoking.
Right. Yeah. They talk about purity. Health. Yeah.
I mean, that's legitimate. And there are certain.
Yeah. It reminded me of Edward Norton in American History X, where he's all about purity and taking care of yourself and that kind of thing. Yeah.
I mean, which is a legitimate cultural emphasis, and we really, really should be less libertine. And sure, yeah, I am a failure on many aspects of this.
Right. But so it hasn't affected me. Call you out on your hypocrisy like he did.
Yeah, but enough. He smoked too. So, no, he did that on purpose because he was angry.
Yes.
He still had nothing against drinking and smoking. He just called him out on the hypocrisy, hoping to get a dig. But because he was a teenager fighting an adult, Herr Knopf, in fact, turns the tables on him, responding as an actual adult does. Which I found interesting, which was a mild failure on his part, Knopf's part, because that's not how you influence the teenager. It is how you get to his mother, though. It is how you, which was his actual goal in that. So, you know, he won. I'm not sure he won after the final scene in the film, you know, given the younger brother Willie's response and, you know, even Thomas's heel face turn at the very, very end, which may or may not be legitimate. You know, his face heel turn, or heel turn, let's be honest. You know, Thomas is pretty much consistently an a-hole.
Yeah, I had a bit of a problem with
everyone
him.
Other than Peter. Except at certain points.
I mean, I know they wanted a big dramatic ending in this film, but I really didn't see Thomas just beelining for Peter to beat the shit out of him and then try to kill him at the end. Other than to have that kind of redemptive moment where he decides not to and tells him to get out of there. I knew there was going to be a get out of there moment. I didn't see there was going to be a battle to the near death before the get out of there moment. And it played a little bit off to me.
Well, this is a 93 film and they made that, they had that need to have that redemption arc and that drama when it's not justified by the plot development so far, which that there is plot development and character development at all in this film is what makes it superior to the 2018 Korean film, which has minimal to no character development. By the way, to bring it back up, Daniel, because you didn't see it and you should. It's worth watching.
Okay.
But it's all over the place. There's almost no real character development. There's a little bit of the main character.
Yeah.
But like a little bit. And then the magical older brother isn't even mentioned at all, shows up later in the film, who's apparently the real hero, even though the main character is played up as the main. It was disjointed. Still, great dance numbers in it. And a pretty decent underlying message if you can get through the convoluted multiple simultaneous plots.
There's a lot going on, for sure.
Yeah. Well, and that is the most insecure prison camp in a movie ever, unless it's perhaps a Hogan's Heroes film, which I don't believe they made. Like, the people are just popping up everywhere. I'm like, how did you get out of the commie into the soldier area? How?
Yeah, like, it's very much a randomly. Hogan's Heroes security situation,
like,
for sure.
Like, magical, without the Sergeant Schultz, who is the best character in Hogan's Heroes, I will have you know. I know nothing. Seriously, come on. But, yeah.
I know we're bunching up against time, but before we get back to the final summaries and review, I do want to just say a little bit of piece about that final scene. I think you're right, Reverend Lee. There should have been more plot and character development to the point where the audience knows that the final face-off is like inevitable and it's gonna come. It's not like a surprise, like, oh my god, what? He's gonna and they're fighting, and it should have been like, oh no, he's coming and there's gonna be a fight. And there should have been some dread and some tension as opposed to just surprise, like, oh, they're fighting? Oh,
or it should have just been the get out of here.
Yeah.
You either commit
one way or the other.
Or don't, or just go the end bit of it and ignore that because it wasn't necessary for the plot.
Right. Yeah.
Doesn't it seem like they tried to do that with the Arvid rift and with the Noah Wiley, like supplanting him as his friend and those things?
It was poorly executed just because he did the full I drink the Kool-Aid thing. Mm-hmm. Doesn't
mean he's going to try and kill his best friend.
His best friend. Yeah.
Yeah. He's still his best friend. It doesn't mean he's just going to murder him because he catches him in a dance club. There should have been some scene where there's some serious betrayal going on between the two of them. I don't know exactly what. You could have set it up any number of ways, but the audience should have felt this tension of these two forces coming together and clashing and felt this dread that, oh no, what's going to happen? You know, that kind of thing, as opposed to what we got.
I think they tried it with the thing where he was at Peter's house and it's like, I should turn you.
Yeah. Mm.
Yeah. That scene, or I should, don't make me report you, whatever the unfinished ends. I think they tried to do that. It just wasn't well executed.
Right. Yeah. It almost
I think they
feel
tried
like
to build it, but I think that part of the plot failed.
Yeah.
They had a lot more that they could have done with it.
Yeah. For as much as they spent on this friendship between the three of these people, I think they should have really made us feel like there was a real rift, a real break between these two people.
But they really didn't.
They really didn't. It more felt like two friends who had some differences and they were kind of growing apart, as opposed to two friends who had this massive rift and all of a sudden they hate each other or they can't forgive each other in this moment, at least.
Yeah, like to the level of murder.
Right. Rift. Like, I was like, what? You're choking him to death? What's happening in this movie? Like, Dan pisses me off too. I can't imagine me like choking him to death.
No, especially like my best friend. Yeah, my best friend, I can't imagine ever that ever happening with. I mean,
you know,
yeah,
I think in the script they have three or four different elements to that that they probably thought were enough to build the case that the audience would think that there is this inevitable conflict that's occurring, but I don't think it played out, because in the scene where he's in his house talking to his younger brother and then he walks in on him and they have that, I'm going to turn you. It almost seems as if the Christian Bale character is like catching himself, realizing, oh, wait, am I the baddie? Because he doesn't finish that statement, because he realizes that he is the thing that Peter's telling him he's becoming.
Right. Well, which is what specifically makes the later scene of the attempted murder not have the impact it should.
Yeah. Right.
And, you know, mind you, the brush off at the funeral, if it had that and maybe something more after that.
And they do almost come to blows right before Arvid kills himself.
Yeah. Yeah. And, that was
on the street.
That was an interesting scene. Back to lovely, lovely AnCap things. One of the things I loved is that they showed some passive resistance in the fact that there were these clubs, like the first scene in Cafe Bismarck, where they had the little runner come in and warn them, and then suddenly they switched to polka from swing.
Mm-hmm.
And everyone started dancing polka.
Very much remind me like a speakeasy type situation.
Yeah. And then the relabeling. Yeah. The relabeling of records and record stores, the passive, the joys of black markets. This is why prohibition cannot and will not ever work. Without absolute levels of violence, prohibition cannot succeed.
I noticed those scenes, and I likened them to how social media has kind of become. Like, you almost have to be dancing the polka on Facebook or other places these days, while you do your subversive stuff on the alternative channels. And these are things that weren't even subversive a year ago. And in fact,
or you relabel your content, Daniel, you rename the title of your show to be less offensive.
Not exactly in that respect, but more in the, you have to be careful about what you say on Facebook. Otherwise it be removed.
Love to get corrected. Kicked off Facebook. It's the last social media account I have.
but then you have to go to alternatives to actually be able to have open exchange of ideas and jocular ribbing of your friends, who in a locker room setting you would call F words, and you can't say those F words anymore on social media, even in jest, you know?
Uh-huh. Well, you can. But there's consequences. I mean, that honestly, I think one of the biggest problems in general we're facing right now is not what a lot of people that claim libertarianism, let's say, they seem to think authority is a bad thing. They seem to think hierarchy is a bad thing. This is untrue. It's these things without accountability. It's no one wants to be responsible for their own crap anymore. No one does. Of course, you know, being responsible for what you do is hard. It takes effort. But our government, you know, the powers that be, our betters, actively avoid responsibility at every turn.
Mm-hmm. They're never held accountable. Never.
Well, not only are they not held accountable, they actively dodge it by writing laws in ways that just put off the actual rulemaking to some other also unaccountable body.
Right, or don't apply it to them.
And they just ignore the responsibility that comes with rulership. If you're going to rule, rule. Now, I would like, mind you, one of the only things Tucker Carlson has ever said that I found beneficial. It's, I don't have a problem with there being elites. I would just like to be able to respect them, and I'm paraphrasing like hell on that. Mm-hmm. But seriously, I don't have a problem with there being elites. The elites will always be with us. I would rather they were worthy of respect, were accountable, understood that one cannot have power without duty. Well, and hope to hold it for long enough that people don't get so annoyed with you that you in fact get replaced by other people that take your place and also are unaccountable leads. My response to the whole, oh, it's not a democracy, it's a republic nonsense is, no, you're right. It's not a democracy. It never has been. It has always been an unaccountable oligarchy. Period.
Yeah.
Spiraling out of control in ever increasing levels of power.
Even like what little tiny, tiny bits of accountability, they just keep trying to throw them everywhere. It's just sheer nonsense. Mm-hmm. I'm like, can you not just maybe take accountability for your own, you know, bovine fecal matter?
Well, my favorite thing is when they claim to accept responsibility or have accountability for certain things. All it does is amount to a 30-second public statement. That's them.
Hey, I took responsibility for that when I apologized for murdering 500,000 people. I took responsibility.
Yep. No, there's one way for accountability on that sort of level to be considered, and that is, let's be honest, up against the wall. Seriously, firing squad. Now, that is a capital offense. Mass murder is a capital offense. I have no problem with capital punishment.
But
I have a problem with governments implementing it because of the lack of accountability. Mass murderers should be held to account the only way. Like individual murder, sure. Pay the weregild, make the family whole. Fine. Mea culpa. But you have to make good. You have to make up. You are now responsible for their family. Ancient Dane law. Icelandic law. If you kill someone, you are now responsible for their family. Period. They are now your family. You must feed them, clothe them, treat them well, as if they were yours. Because now they are. Because you killed their daddy. Oops. You know?
Yeah, this is... I think that there's something to that for sure. Remuneration and trying to make whole. That is true justice. The justice system that we have now is all about doling out punishments.
Well, it's about making the crown whole, i.e. extending the power of the current regime.
Mm-hmm.
It's about making the empire whole, not making the victim whole.
Right. All right. Well,
off topic.
Yeah, let's get back to the movie because we are now overtime. So we're going to need to get into the swing of winding this one down.
So let's do Jazz Records out of 10.
Okay. Yeah. Jazz Records out of 10. Robert, you got any final points you want to make before you get into your final summary review?
I'll just include it in my final summary, Daniel. Thank you.
All right. All right. Well, how many records are you going to spin at the end of this one?
Well, I think my experience is a little different than everybody else's. I doubt everyone watched the 2018 and then the 93. So I had a little bit of a jarring, two totally different films. But there's definitely lots of good stuff in this. Lots to discuss. Fantastic. I do wish, the emotional moments in the film. I mean, it had them, and I appreciated that. And it had a great relationship development between the characters and the way they grew apart and the reasons why they did. And all that is all a lot of really good stuff. I wish they had brought together the final plot elements at the end better. And one last thing is I wish the little act of defiance by saying swing heil, I think it was a little bit unintentionally hilarious. It came off as more kind of funny than it was like defiant. I don't know if it really, maybe it was a real thing and maybe it hit harder back then. But when I watched it the other day, it just came off as kind of laughable. Like, okay, that you're saying swing heil, that I don't know how that's supposed to piss anybody off, but whatever. The acting is strong. The directing is pretty solid. It does look rather, dull and drab though, compared to the 2018. But that's just my experience. I think if you watched it yourself all by itself, it'll look fine. Kenneth Branagh is I think the standout actor in the film, even though he doesn't have a ton of screen time. Bale's fine. You can tell why he went to go on and do more things. the other two actors, I mean, everybody did a fine job. There's no real standout that, hey, this was not good. I'm going to give this one 7 records out of 10. I recommend it, but I don't think it's a masterpiece.
All right. Very good. Very good. I am going to.
Totally one moment.
Yeah.
One moment. Robert, how many jazz tap performances out of 10 would you give the.
Oh, the 2018.
Yeah.
The jazz.
No, because you and I only you and I get to rate this one because Daniel failed to make the true. Mistake you did. So,
I'd probably rate the jazz tap. It really kind of depends on what you're looking for in that film. It is a little bit all over the shop. So I think you can find parts that you enjoy a lot out of it and then kind of forgive its failures a little bit more. But I think I would rate it just a little bit higher. I think I'd go about 7.5 on that. It's definitely not a perfect film. There were the elements that I enjoyed more than the elements I enjoyed, even though it needed character development. It needed a lot of things, but I don't know. For some reason, I had a good time watching it, and that was good enough for me.
Okay. So it was a bit more entertaining. You got more highs out of it. The
93
even.
Yeah.
A bit more of a chore.
I'd say that. It wasn't necessarily a chore. I got into the 93 version, I think, emotionally better than the 2018. But they're different. They're very different films. I don't know why they're called the same thing.
Okay. All right. Well, Reverend Lee, why don't you pick it up from there since you're going to be reviewing both of them as well as Robert did.
All right. So the 93 film hit some lovely, lovely points of the importance of youth, and the importance of active rather than passive resistance. It's, like I said, I've seen it, I don't know how many times I've mentioned this, but 4 to 5 times I've seen this film, and it still holds up. It still hits me in all the points. I noticed a few things I didn't previously by watching it again for the purpose of reviewing it. I'm going to give it a 8.25 jazz records. I will, however, actively disagree with Robert and on the 2018 film, give it a solid middle of the road 5.0 jazz performances at a Christmas concert where the CEO gets shot in the face. I enjoyed the hell out of the Korean film, but it just doesn't compare. It's too disjointed. It has a good message, but it's its cinematography is great. It's got bits of comedy, bits of darkest F. And you know, like many Korean films, lots of murder. But it just, it was fun. And it made me think, but it also made me think it could have been a better film. Mostly made me think it could have been a better film.
Those are all fair points.
Right, and to you, Daniel.
All right, well, the software's like wigging out on me here. I think we're back. All right. So it sounds like I got to watch this South Korean version. Seems like Robert was more about the highs being high enough to be entertaining. And Reverend Lee, you're more, it's all over the shop. While fun, you needed a bit more for it to compare to the 93. So I only saw the 93. And as I don't believe in intellectual property, I am going to lift a review that I found online that I thought was interesting. It says, who knew a 1993 movie could be timely for today's political climate? Hubby and I watch Swing Kids periodically because we love swing music and dance. Today, when we watched, it seemed ominous and it scared us about the future of our country. What happens when a country feeds its citizens propaganda 24/7? People feel uncomfortable or terrified or angry in response. This is all too familiar now. How do people react to those emotions? They cower in fear and say, just keep your head down. Don't say anything to get yourself into trouble. Or they're scared and they start to distrust everyone and every institution around them and have paranoia. Or they strike out and start an anger campaign of violence against those of differing opinions, ethnicity, color, or religion. All to assuage the cognitive dissonance in their changing world. We are all trying to deal with our changing culture. Watch this movie. It explains it better than I can. Now, I feel like that is maybe a progressive reading of the film, and I could almost say the same things just the other direction, where we are basically bombarded with the single largest propaganda campaign in the history of mankind being perpetrated upon us these days, and we see some parallels of that in this film. The movie itself, I think, is pretty good. I liked Bale. I liked Kenneth Branagh. The story, it's pretty good. I mean, really, you just have these kids who are a bit rebellious, and then there's the HJs that are going to bring order to that kind of thing, and they're resistant to that. Peter gets caught up in it when they steal the radio, and initially Thomas is there for his friend, but then he buys in, drinks the Kool-Aid, and hilarity ensues, and he nearly kills him at the end. Now, the one thing about the end that I didn't quite understand is that it seems as if Peter is being hauled off to be imprisoned and subsequently killed like his father was, and he is almost at peace with it, which I think is not exactly like the uplifting message that I would have wanted to see for somebody standing up for their principles. So I guess I'm a little bit lost on what the point of the movie was supposed to do by the end of it. But overall, I think it's a really good film, and I'm going to give it 7 jitterbugs out of 10. So I switched it up from records to jitterbugs.
And just a note, the jitterbug is the origin of 2 modern forms of dance, both East Coast and West Coast swing, both of which are incredibly exercise-y.
Yeah, that's one thing that my wife and I, when we were watching this, we would get incredibly injured doing this, get incredibly hot and sweaty.
No, and practice. Work into it. I actively recommend you look into maybe joining a local dance thing. I'm sure they have one near you or wherever you end up, because you must escape where you are before the Germans come. Seriously.
Are they going to allow dancing here in the United States? It seems they've shut down all the social dancing.
Well, depends on where you live, sir. Arizona is... Well, while not as 100% open as some other places, you know, Arizona's doing just fine.
Wasn't it Australia that actually did ban dancing?
I think Australia banned all human contact, and you can only go within X number, like 5 kilometers of your home.
And they started shooting dogs because people might congregate to go see the dogs.
And yeah, other such... early 20th century German nationalist tactics. I'm not saying the Australian government are behaving like early 20th century German nationalists.
Yeah, not just, seeing them do that.
I'm just implying it heavily. Good God, I don't know how... I don't understand the lack of more active resistance. Yes, there was a recent series of protests, but why weren't there more? Why didn't they occur earlier? Why didn't these people call out their betters for being, I'm going to use explicatives, is that okay? Call out their betters for being motherfucking jackasses. Like, seriously, what
I
the
think there's
ever living.
Boiling frog there, and initially people thought that there was a safety element to it, and now it's
they've also been disarmed for quite a while. I mean, they still have a few like hunting rifles, but for the most part, you cannot just carry.
I know. I have in fact visited the Australian capital, given what I do for regular income. I have in fact visited the Australian Federal Police headquarters. And had a chat with several people. It's, I mean, I get it. They are not Mirka, but I don't understand why they tolerate it. This might be because I am, you know, a Southerner, B, owned my first gun when I was six, have been trained in firearm safety, etc. I don't see why people are scared of a tool. It's the person behind the tool that matters. Any tool can be a weapon. Any weapon can be a tool, including ones that aren't meant to. You can hammer nails with a pistol. You shouldn't, but you can. And you can use a hammer as a weapon of violence.
But you know the fear tactics of the media when it comes to handguns and firearms.
Of course.
It's massive, massive propaganda campaign against guns all the time, making them out to be scary, scary, scary things to people that don't actually own them.
They're not. I've taken like several of my anti-gun friends out shooting with some of my old school cowboy guns. And they were just like, oh my God. Afterwards, they were so happy, had so much fun. Also, I'm a huge fan of the old school cowboy guns. Mind you, I don't find them overly practical. But
I shot a Peacemaker one time. It was a lot of fun.
Oh, I own two original Peacemakers. I own my great-grandfather's personal Colt Peacemaker and his brother's personal Colt Peacemaker. I inherited these after my grandfather died a couple years ago.
It's a fine shooting iron. I had a good time. It's pretty accurate.
Oh my God, they're amazing. And the whole six shot counting thing is nonsense. Old school, they only carried five rounds in them. They'd use the empty chamber under the hammer because it could jostle and possibly set off the not exactly up to modern standards primers. It could set them off. So they would only carry five rounds in their Peacemakers. And the reason they carried multiple was not to do the two-gun thing. It was so that when this one ran out, they just switch instead of reloading.
Yeah, reloading should take some time.
Yeah. Well, especially with the Peacemaker. Colt Navy, a little different, because that one's a break open. But that may or may not be correct. I'm not as on point on my old guns as I should be as a ridiculous gun geek.
Of course, it's before your boating trip this weekend, right?
What, huh?
Where everything you just mentioned might have fallen off a boat in a couple of days.
Into the lake.
Oh, you mean the things that no one knows where they are?
Yes.
They were lost in a tragic boating accident.
Honestly, given what I do for regular income, I expect the party bureau, otherwise known as the alcohol, tobacco, firearms. That sounds like a party to me, not a government organization. I'm sure they know everything I own. I don't care anymore. They can come for them, and I will gleefully comply with every firearm that they can find.
You found my one gun. Good job, guys.
Oh, no. I'm sorry. I sold that. That's why my income last year was... whatever. Like, they're going to go after antiques. Seriously. I own antique firearms, for God's sakes.
Yeah, the cap and ball, I think, is going to be okay.
Yeah. Come on. It's a black powder maker. Yeah. Like, I can even get the WCF cartridges for those guns anymore. And these aren't, like, chambered in 45 long hold. These are chambered in old school Winchester centerfire rounds that are stupid hard to get. The only reason you can find them anymore at all is because of the lovely sport of cowboy action shooting, which, have you seen those guys?
I've seen a few speed shooters that are pretty damn impressive.
Like old school single shot revolver, multi-target.
Yep.
Bam, 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 bam.
Yep.
Oh my, I've done a little bit of that. Yep, I've done some competitive shooting. Oh, competitive shooting's fun.
Yeah, Robert, I remember seeing
pre-gun.
That Stan Lee, Amazing Humans.
Yeah, that was one of those guys. He was on that show. Yeah, that guy. I'm sure he's, I forget his name, but he's pretty famous. I bet you Reverend Lee might know that guy.
Probably not.
he's I think he's the world record holder in many categories of revolver shooting.
Oh, no, no. I don't know a lot of, I mean, I know some really good firearms instructors, and amusingly enough, I happen to be a firearms instructor for giggles. And if either of y'all, and I'm not talking to the audience, I'm talking to Daniel and Robert, come down to Arizona, we go to a range. Sounds fun.
All right. We'll do it. Well, we should wind this one down. Reverend Lee, it's been a lot of fun. Thank you for recommending Swing Kids. And in the pre-show bonus content, you were suggesting that maybe you might be working on a project yourself and want to come back on and talk about another movie. And maybe we could talk about your future project at that time. But this has been a lot of fun, and appreciate you coming on and for being a longtime listener. I think you, my wife might be the only person who's listened longer.
I hope she is, because if she isn't, y'all have marital difficulties. I do not envy.
Well, I think she hears my voice, but she doesn't register anything that I say.
No, no, I'm not saying she actively pays attention. I'm saying she listens.
Right. She hears. She hears. Anyway,
let's say listen, because I don't want to cause marital issues, right? Right. Y'all cause them yourself. Yes.
So anyway, moving on from marital issues, we're going to talk about some mommy son issues next week when we talk about Alfred Hitchcock's classic Psycho with Norman Bates. We might also get into the Vince Vaughn version a little bit here and there with our friend Snobby Bobby of the Not For Everyone podcast making his return to the show. And that will be a bit of a horror movie slash Halloween October surprise, which will be a lot of fun with the master of horror, Alfred Hitchcock, which I don't think we've done a Hitchcock movie. We've talked about Hitchcockian themes and devices and techniques in the past. So I think that it's high time that we do a Hitchcock film.
Sure. And Psycho is one of his most iconic. Absolutely.
Yep. So that's what we'll be doing next week. And Reverend Lee, I hope you can stick around a little bit longer. We got a little bit more content for people who watch the other version of the show and also the ones who pay us dollar bills over on our Patreon. So go to lastnighters.com Patreon to get a piece of that, and go to lastnighters.com/198 for the show notes and more for this episode. And we'll see you guys all next week for Psycho with Snobby Bobby. And with that, we'll say goodnight from last night, everyone. Peace out. All right, and just another minute or two on the actual Anarchy podcast, because we're already over an hour and a half of recording time here. So we should probably just wind this down and get into the Kathleen Turner Overdrive for a little bit longer. We're having fun with Reverend Lee. It's been great having you on. We've gone on many side quests on this one, but that is, as you know, something that we do pretty often on the show, as you are a longtime listener. But does anyone have any final things that they just wanted to bring up about Twin Kids before we do end the show tonight?
Absolutely. One of the more interesting aspects of Swing Kids, the 93 film, was that they mentioned the specific usefulness of culture in resisting unaccountable power. The fact that this youth movement, and which is why I think youth and education is so important, the youth movement in specifically Hamburg in the case of the film, but they adopted external culture as a means of resisting the unaccountable power they saw before them. They not only adopted the music of another culture, specifically American jazz, which there's good jazz and there's bad jazz. Most of it's bad jazz currently. Old jazz is pretty much all good. As I mentioned in the pre-show, that I went to the number one jazz school in the world, and so I've seen a lot of free jazz concerts, and modern jazz is
leaves a bit to be desired.
Formulaic, which I mean, that's not the point, right?
Yeah, isn't that kind of the antithesis of the point of jazz?
It, in fact, is. So you got that. And then you had, they adopted British fashion, not American, British fashion at that time. And they adopted American inner city slang and jazz slang.
Right.
And we're quizzing each other throughout the film on jive slang. Not, and they absolutely engaged in one of the current cultural sins, cultural appropriation, which I consider cultural appreciation. Mind you, you can do it in a way that you're, you know, not okay. Yeah. Or, you know, is it okay? I don't know. I don't care. The people pretend to my culture by putting on horned helmets and wearing kilts. Who cares, right? Oh, look, you're wearing an impractical piece of metal with cow horns on it. Woo! Oh,
you're a culture. We're a culture, not a costume.
No, no. I have appreciated culture and worn a costume at the same time. I used to do LARPing a bit, yeah? So, every character I made, I'd research the hell out of the culture behind it, get appropriate costume for it, and spend ridiculous amounts of money and time developing a full thing to appreciate a culture. That's not appropriation, that's appreciation.
Yeah.
My profile picture I used on everything is an in-costume picture, you know, with turban and full deal. Yeah. Some with the eye patch, some without, whatever. Which is always fun when you are full visioned. Wearing an eye patch for a couple of 4 hours.
Yeah.
It leads to interesting things. Always, if you're going to costume as something with an eye patch, always eye patch your undominant eye. Just saying. Never cover up your dominant eye with an eye patch. Because you can cover your non-dominant and you're fine.
All right. Also, to help
just saying. Really just saying. And you'll recover fine, and your vision will not be affected whatsoever. But it's always build. If you're going to do something, do it to appreciate other cultures and to the other ancestral culture. Yeah, there's people that wear plaid skirts and pretend they're Celts. Woo, good for you. Who cares, right? Great.
Yeah. Everyone's so easily offended.
It doesn't affect me in any way.
Wait.
All right. So one last thing about what you brought up was that the Swing Kids, they adopted culture from different areas as a way of protest or as a way of resisting passively. I wonder if we see when Knopf is at dinner with them and he's giving that joke about all the different cheeses and wines and things that they bring back. And it's like the Greek chocolate and the Italian wine or whatever the wrong things are, like Greeks aren't known for that and French aren't known for this or whatever. And Peter mentions like the appropriate ones, like what each region is actually known for, but it's a similar thing in that in their sort of conquest. So this is like the totalitarian power is appreciating those regional delicacies and appropriating or appreciating those things as a way of displaying that power that they have in their empire and in their reach. Whereas it's contrasted with the adoption of different cultural elements from other things as a passive resistance. And I wonder if that is brought into the film purposefully to show two different kind of angles of that concept.
Honestly, that this is a product of Hollywood, I seriously doubt they understood the depth of what they were actually talking about. Hollywood is in fact, although not exclusively populated by progressives, it is entirely overpopulated by them. They're actively unaware of those sorts of subtleties. I believe it's blinded by their, jumping back to the 2018 version, their ideology, which is one of the things, now that we're in the post show,
and we're almost in
anarchy.
The post show.
Actual anarchy content. the name of the Christmas review show. To quote Staff Sergeant Jackson, the name of this is Fuck Ideology.
Hmm.
That was, in fact, the name.
It was.
Of the Christmas show. Tap Dance Review. So, it was kind of, I really, really appreciated that. I found it hilarious. But it's their ideology blinds them to those subtleties, which is why you shouldn't trust any ideology, even your own. And yes, we all have them. Every last goddamn one of us has an ideology. The trick is knowing you have it so it doesn't overwhelm you. It doesn't become your all. Sure, I've adopted one. Great, wonderful. Not entirely certain that it's libertarian anymore, or even anarchist anymore. Hell, I may have been at least partially convinced by both Hans Hermann Hoppe and Curtis Yarvin that ain't nothing wrong with monarchy, so long as it's accountable.
Mm-hmm.
Eh?
At least you know who they are.
You know? Of course I do. Of course I do.
No, no, what I mean is that at least you know who to be mad at when it's a monarchy. Like,
oh, no, no. You have,
you know where the concentration of power is.
The problem we have is we have this quasi-centralization of power at the federal level. Mm-hmm. But at the federal level, it's so dispersed and so decentralized.
And there we only
is
know the
no
face.
One person you can blame. There's mm-hmm. no one that can be held accountable.
Yep.
I would rather, if we're going to have a country the size of ours, I would rather it be a monarchy so I know who to blame. So I know who is accountable for the thing. Because yep. a monarch, if they are truly sovereign, must be accountable. Otherwise,
deep
they're
thoughts.
Sovereign.
Deep thoughts with Reverend
not sovereign.
Lee.
I'm not exactly clear on what being accountable means in the realm of being a sovereign, though.
Oh, no.
When you kill your own people, does that mean the people can come and kill the sovereign? Because that never happens.
Of course they can.
But that never happens, though.
Well, obviously not. Mostly because the sovereign has... Actually, no. It has happened more than once.
By the people? Because the regicide
French
happened
Revolution.
All the time, but it's usually
French
like
Revolution.
By the people.
That was okay. Not the elites. Those were people that became the new elites.
Right.
Those were not the elites.
Robespierre.
Does, fact, no, okay. Yeah. These were, or hell, look at what happened to the czars.
By the commies. Yeah. Yeah.
Those
Nicholas.
Results weren't necessarily good.
And then they went, and I'm not saying it ends well.
But were they... Were they, I mean, they probably had a laundry list of complaints.
Aspirations
but,
to elite them.
But I guess what I'm saying is, you know, as a direct result of their policies, they are held accountable due to, you know, they ended up killing like 20,000 people or whatever. In those cases of those revolutions, I don't know if those were in specific reactions to crimes committed by the state. By the sovereign, or were they just generally, hey, we got power now, we got a bunch of people that are pissed off, and let's channel that energy against the elites.
Both general malcontent.
Right.
The thing is, as a organizational principle, monarchy is superior to oligarchy, to my mind.
Mm-hmm.
And democracy is an illusion used by monarchs to get into initial power. And oligarchs to maintain their power. So I distrust it as an excuse for anything.
Well, even in its purest form with no corruption whatsoever, it's still terrible.
It works at best at like the small town level.
Mm-hmm.
Like the under 1,000 population level. And if it's going to work, it must require unanimity. Or exile. One of the two. The physical removal from the situation if you don't comply with the local, you know, Liechtenstein. Cool. Get out. I have no problem with this. I have a problem with a local group setting up rules that don't allow a exit. I don't have a problem with them having rules that I disagree with. That just means I won't live there. That's it. I don't have a problem with the HOAs, for example. They exist for a reason. I have a problem with some of them if they have overactive members who just patrol the streets looking for every single possible infraction. So that means I don't want to live in that community because that community is broken. Right?
Mm-hmm.
That's it. I have a very, very narrow view. It's culture is primary. Find a culture that you're amenable to or build one around you and then build up from that. Build up from a neighborhood. Get on your local school board. You know, think, you know, to quote Brian McClanahan, think local, act local, which is his big tagline on every single episode he does. And if you don't watch his stuff, you really should. Brilliant man, Southern scholar, has a proper appreciation of his august majesty, Abraham Lincoln. Yeah, as a Southerner, I bet you know my feelings about that man. So, whatever. People like him. Cool. Y'all like him over there.
Yeah, well, I can tell you that these two guys don't like him. But I do like McClanahan. I know he's part of a Liberty Classroom, and I've also watched several of his YouTube videos. So I do agree that they are very informative, and he's a brilliant guy. And I'll post a link to his YouTube channel on our show notes page. It can be found at actualenergy.com/255. Anyway, we should really wind this one down.
All right. I've kept y'all overly long.
No, it's an extra action-packed episode.
Hours. Yeah.
So anyway, this has been a lot of fun. We will see you again in the near future. I hope that you had a good time as well. And we appreciate you being a listener, follower of ours, and a frequent commenter on some of the YouTube videos and whatnot. And do keep in touch in the meantime. I will actually send you some other ways to get a hold of me. I'm on Signal and Telegram and other things now. Signal seems to be the primary conversation pathway at this point. We'll see how the rest of it all shakes out. But anyway, thank you guys for joining us as our audience, and we'll see you guys all next week for Psycho with our man Snobby Bobby of the Not For Everyone podcast. And we'll see you guys all next week. Maximum freedom, everyone. Peace out.
Chipmunks. CHIPMUNK. We're the chipmunks. Guaranteed to brighten your day. Doot, doot. Doot, doot, doot. Doot, doot, doot.